So this is an oral history interview on the 24th of June 2013 with James Sherwood and...
Rod Bevan.
So, Dr. Bevan, let's start right at the beginning. What first made you get into teaching?
When I left school, which was King Edward VI Camp Hill Grammar School in Birmingham, I left with a feeling of enormous pleasure at the time that I'd had there. And I'd always wanted to go into some sort of science-related job. But I didn't go directly to university. I went and worked at the University of Birmingham for a while as a technician. In fact, my name first appeared on a research paper as the technician in 1963 from the Department of Bacteriology at the University of Birmingham. And I stayed there as a technician doing biochemical research for the group of research students, for a delightful man called Neville Cartwright, who was a biochemist in the bacteriology department, and then moved on to get a different sort of experience and worked in electronics on the cyclotron at the University of Birmingham Physics Department. And during that time, I thought it would be interesting to try working in a school and did it as a school technician. So I was a school science technician for 3 years, and during that time did a high national certificate in chemistry, which was a part-time and evening course, and not with any clear idea of what would happen when I finished that course. That was decided for me because I was given exemption from exams for the full-time course, which comes after HNC, but I had to do the course. And that meant that I had to do the year after that, which was graduate membership of the Royal Institute of Chemistry. So that is what I did, and then went and did a PhD, and it was during that time, when I was teaching undergraduates a little bit, that I also thought school teaching is the sort of thing to do. You learn a lot, you teach a lot, and more importantly, you have a good collegiate atmosphere where you have colleagues from a wide variety of other disciplines. I shouldn't say more importantly, I should say just as important. And that has been true throughout my teaching life, that I have enjoyed the company of people who know something about almost everything.
And you started teaching at Sherborne, or did you teach?
I did indeed, yes. In September, 4th of September 1972, I started teaching at Sherborne, which, for those who don't know, is a full boys boarding school in North Dorset. And I stayed there for 19 years and became head of chemistry during that time.
And what led you to Westminster?
A number of circumstances, but the job being offered was head of science. And what struck me then was I could capitalise on the bacteriology that I'd done, the fact that my PhD was somewhat biochemical. I could capitalise on some of the physics that I'd done with the electronics department, with the work on the cyclotron. And the idea of running the science department, which at that time was extremely famous because of the huge amount of money that Westminster had spent on the Robert Hooke Science Centre, and the investment that they'd made in science, it was obviously a very exciting prospect. So that, amongst other things, was the reason for looking at the job, which I saw in November. It was about the time that the negotiations were going on for the Maastricht Treaty. Now, I remember I applied for the job in November and didn't hear anything for quite a long time after my interview, until I had a phone call from Anne Carman, the then headmaster secretary, to say she couldn't say whether they would offer me the job or not, but would I please not accept anything else for another week or so. So I thought, fine, okay, of course. And then I got the call, I think in early December of 1991, to come in September 1992, which I did.
How do you think the school's changed in your time as at the school over the 21 years you've spent here?
Well, it isn't just the school, it's the environment in which it operates. You have got a school at Westminster now, which is much kinder than it was then, without having lost any of its academic edge or its tolerance, which is considerable and admirable, for unusual people. But you have a school now which is much more professional. Now, that's a word which is often used in a political correctness sense. But there were things about the Westminster of 1992 which were, to some extent, hangovers from a bygone age of independent schools, or public schools, as we can properly call Westminster School. And so I thought that when I came, here was a school which was quirky, full of clever pupils, full of clever staff, but in some ways pretty abrasive. And I thought that, particularly with the girls, they had to be survivors to enjoy it. And at times I felt this went too much towards the tolerance of individualism at the expense of the welfare of everybody. So it could be quite difficult to get people all to agree to do something. The staff wouldn't always agree to have a common line on matters of discipline, for example. They wanted themselves to be individualistic. And some of them, frankly, thought that they were still in some sort of university common room. And I don't think that that, at the time, was particularly helpful in some areas of the school life. Don't misunderstand, I'm not suggesting that I thought it was a deeply unhappy place or that it was fantastically incompetent or anything like that, although the results certainly weren't as good as some people cracked them up to be at that time. And if you looked a few years earlier than when I came, they certainly weren't. So there were a few problems with it, I thought, and I think the abrasiveness, which could be overwhelming for some people, I'm sure, was a problem. Over the years, that has, through the management of successive through the management of successive headmasters and of all other staff, and with changing views about what we should be doing and how we should be doing it, we have managed to retain the academic edge. In fact, we have improved on it very considerably in some areas, and we have managed to avoid, I think, a lot of the abrasive style, which in those times was very confrontational with some people.
How do you think that was really brought about, though? You know, who do you think there was one person that was particularly responsible for the shift in Westminster's environment or atmosphere?
No, it's more gradual than that, and I think it's also one of the things that headmasters and other people, heads of department, have to live with. And that is that it's quite hard to make change with existing staff sometimes, particularly if they've been here for a long time. So that every headmaster, and John Ray referred to this in his book, Letters from School, that you sometimes can only influence change by the ability to appoint new staff. And that is a matter of chance. So I think by appointing staff who chime more with modern attitudes, the best aspects of modern attitudes, I think that what Westminster has got now is a far more professional and far more effective, in some respects, cohort of people. Colossal enthusiasm, huge energy, an enormous willingness to be involved in every aspect of pupils' lives. And certainly the science department, which is the one, of course, until I became senior master I knew best, has got some truly admirable people. And indeed the science department throughout all my time here, increasingly as time went on, has been very heavily involved in all aspects of school life, in station, in expeditions, in tutoring. I think that they, together with all other colleagues in the school now have a much more determined and wide-ranging approach to the job than was evident with some parts of the school in 1992.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that the pupils you saw at Westminster were unusual. What do you think makes a Westminster pupil different to the other pupils that you've taught or other pupils at other schools?
Westminster pupils inevitably have a degree of assurance about them because of living in London. I won't describe them as streetwise, that would not be the word that's appropriate, but I think living in a big city and the capital city and one of the highest profile cities in the world, pupils who come here do tend to have a certain sort of confidence about them. Many of them have a confidence about them because of what their parents do. We have many high-flying, high-profile parents in all sorts of walks of life, politics, media, finance, science, you name it, and we've got some there. And I think simply because of their parental background and what they experience at home, many of them are going to have that assurance of dealing a lot with high-powered, high-profile adults. Of course, not all of them are like that by any means, but that does produce a general sense of assurance, which is very noticeable, or was very noticeable when I first came, and I still admire the best aspects of it, because I think it does make Westminster's very good in company. I suppose I felt that just this last weekend when we had the open day for prospective candidates for the sixth form, watching our sixth formers take them around on tours and the assurance which they showed and the clear pleasure which they showed in talking to the visitors, I thought was a very good example of the assurance which they have. Secondly, of course, they have a huge variety of opportunity in terms of what London has to offer and to experience that. They have, although it's sometimes not cool to show it perhaps, they have intellectual curiosity, a natural ability. They can synthesise new ideas into what they already know. They are the cream, and it shows. And I think that that makes the place extremely stimulating to teach in, very interesting to talk to pupils and to watch them perform in all of the arenas that they do, whether it be sport or music or drama or the classroom or whatever. It's just the pleasure for me of watching very good people do difficult things well.
Do you as a teacher feel that developing the assurance that you say Westminster's inherently have, you know, is that the main part of your job? Or do you think the by developing them academically, the assurance develops with it?
If people ask me what I do, I say that I'm a schoolmaster, which is different from saying that I'm a teacher. The teaching of chemistry has always been very important. It has, after all, occupied most of my waking life for the last 40-odd years. But what one is here to do is to offer opportunities to young people to make the most of their abilities and to help them progress in every aspect of their life. So every aspect of their life is of interest. Their interests, their abilities, showing them that they might have abilities they didn't know about. After all, the early years of teaching are to equip people with that dreadful word skills, but if you equip them with reading and writing and powers of argument, and you offer them a broad brush approach to education by giving them experience of lots of different subjects, and you encourage their interests and try to kindle, as I say, new ones, and then you gradually narrow down. And some people say that the English education system becomes too specialist too quickly. Personally, I don't agree, because I think to be very, very good at things, you do have to have a great deal of practice. But other people obviously think that other educational systems offer different ways of ultimately doing the same thing. But I think it is the job of a schoolmaster or schoolmistress or a teacher, however you want to describe it, to bring on young people to be adult people and to make their way in the world and live their life.
So more recently, you've moved into a senior management position and given up most of your teaching responsibilities. How has that, you know, how did you feel when you were asked to take on the senior master role and when you realised that you would have to teach a much more reduced timetable?
That was accidental, in a way. I had given up being head of science, and that was in 2008. And I was going to retire at the end of that academic year, in other words, in July 2009, by which time I was already over the Westminster retiring age. And in the interim, of course, the notion of a retiring age had disappeared into the background. So I went to the back benches, as it were, in September 2008, and was teaching 28 periods a week of chemistry and all the concomitant marking. And the senior master at the time then went on to do a similar job at another school, but at comparatively short notice, so that there was no one in place in January 2009. So the headmaster asked me if I would do it for two terms. And if you're offered a job in cabinet, I think you take it, because that's essentially what it is. For me, it of course meant a reduction in teaching load, quite a considerable one actually, from 28 down to 11. But the advantages which it produced were that I would get a much greater insight into how the school worked, because I would see the enormous amount of work that goes on behind the scenes in SMC matters. It also meant that coming up to retirement, I would be phased out of teaching, so that I wouldn't go suddenly from huge amounts of chemistry teaching to none. And it also meant that I would get to know a large number of the pupils who I would never teach. So that was something which for me was not really worth thinking about. You just say yes to that. So I started to do it and learnt very quickly a very large number of things. And then Stephen Spur asked me if I would do it for a further year. So that postponed the retirement age again, and I did it. And whilst I was doing it, I thought, well, actually, if I'm going to do it for a year and two terms, why not do it for 2 years and two terms? And so I asked him if I could do the following year, and he agreed. And then the following year, he asked me if I would do one more year. And that was this year. And I am going to retire on the 31st of August 2013. But it has been fantastic. It has done all of the things that I thought it would do. It has got me to understand the working of the school. It has got me to understand the absolutely colossal amount of work that the senior management team does, which is eye-watering sometimes, the amount of work that they do. It's given me an insight very much into the workings of being a headmaster, of being an undermaster, of being all the other things on SMC. And that has been very, very interesting and sometimes very demanding. There's also the other things which I thought it would do, which would be to take me out gradually from the chemistry teaching. It's certainly done that. But I've been lucky with the sets which I kept, which was one sixth form, one remove and one lower shell. And that was a nice mix, and that has been terrific. But it has also, and this quite considerably, given me the other thing that I hoped it would give, and that is a knowledge of many more of the pupils. And because of the things that I do in Latin prayers, or in Abbey, or in prize giving, all this sort of stuff, I come into contact with very large numbers of pupils, which I didn't before. And that has truly been an enormous pleasure.
So you've worked closely with the senior management team, and particularly the headmaster and undermaster, for the past 3 years. How do you think, at your time at Westminster, how has working with different headmasters influenced your time at the school? So I presume you worked with Dr. Spur and Summerscale. Did you work?
The headmaster who appointed me was David Summerscale. Then Tristram Jones-Parry.
And TJP.
And then Stephen Spur. Very different people, but all with the same end in view, without doubt. But curiously, the headmaster's day-to-day effect on me was not huge in some ways, simply because I was the head of science, and the headmaster and I, whichever one it was, would talk about what we wanted for the science department, what the strategy would be. And then they left me more or less to get on with it and run the department. They delegated the job to me, which was, after all, what I was appointed to do. And I would see them, talk about things. I saw Tristram quite a bit when I was president of the Common Room for 3 years in another guise. But all of them have shown trust and confidence in, broadly speaking, just talking to me from time to time, nudge on the tiller here, perhaps, if one can put it like that, but just to put into practice the policies of the school regarding the science department and other things. And I think if a head of department can have that, and have the trust of the headmaster, then he's lucky indeed. And I was lucky in that respect.
Do you think the science department has grown considerably over the time that you've been here? And do you think, as the school becomes more international, do you think it will continue to grow?
It's certainly grown enormously. Hook, when I came, was much smaller in terms of the number of people who were teaching in it. It was smaller in terms of the number of labs. And, of course, now it is bursting at the seams, to the extent, actually, that a number of periods can't be taught in Hook simply because we don't have the laboratory space. The number of people coming in to do sciences has increased enormously. I think the reputation of Westminster Science is very high. Lots of the people who come in are prospective medics, and we are very successful at sending pupils to medical school, of course. That tends to be the high-profile one, but we're very successful at sending physicists and chemists and engineers and biologists and what have you. We're successful at all of it. And the energy of the science department has grown enormously. When I first came, quite a number of the staff had been here quite a time, and I think it's true to say were distinguished members of the profession who probably were coming towards the end of their enthusiasms. So the opportunity to get younger, vibrant staff, and some older, vibrant staff, actually, because age is not necessarily related to enthusiasms, I think it was very interesting to see how the numbers would grow over the years, and they certainly did. It's very interesting to see how the market forces, if we can put it like that, have influenced actually the balance of the school, because the numbers doing maths and sciences now is considerably greater. When I came, there were 4 chemistry sets just about. But the sets could be quite small. Now there are 5. The number of physics sets has grown to 5. The number of biology sets has grown from 2 to 3, then to 4. Biology particularly, the numbers have gone up quite significantly. So it's a much bigger outfit, so to speak, than it was when I first came. No doubt about that.
You mentioned that some teachers, as they get older, tend to lose enthusiasm for the subject and teaching. How have you found your teaching time, because you've taught here for 21 years, and presumably the syllabus that you've been teaching has been more or less the same, and how do you find ways of maintaining your enthusiasm and excitement for teaching?
Well, I think there are a number of answers to that. Firstly, the syllabuses have changed quite a lot, and it's common for people to say, oh yes, it's all dumbed down. So the chemistry you did, James, they say, oh, it isn't like the chemistry in the old days. No, it isn't. It is actually a great deal better. And one of the reasons for that is that when I first started teaching, the A-level factual content was considerable without very much explanation of anything. So that you might know a lot of things, but you didn't understand as many in those days.
Okay.
So that you could spend weeks talking about the chemistry of nitrogen, for example, which is very complex, and now you don't do that. Mm-hmm. But to know the chemistry of nitrogen just as a set of facts, if it isn't put into the context of the chemistry of other things, is not worth doing. And the trouble is there are so many other things that you have to make selections if you are going to go for more understanding. And some of the understanding that you have now at A level would have been regarded as university level second or third year when I first started teaching. So the syllabuses, I think, have changed much more towards understanding, and therefore inevitably, to get that understanding, you have less factual information. I think probably with the chemistry of the periodic table, that's gone a bit too far. So there isn't quite enough in it at the moment to get the patterns very accurately in some cases. But I think that that, with luck, might be remedied in a next incarnation of the syllabus. Chemistry for me has always been a way in which I look at the world. So everything around me I see in little particles, and particles bouncing around. And one of my favourite stories, which probably you will have heard, is that I can't look at a stained glass window without seeing the electrons jumping from lower energy d orbitals to higher ones to give the colour in the transition metal ions. And that's just the way I look at the world. It's the way my head functions. So it's never been difficult for me to keep enthusiastic about chemistry, because it's how the universe is for me. It isn't only how the universe is, because as you and many others will have experienced, I'm quite happy to talk about almost anything else, mm-hmm. as well as chemistry. But I think keeping the enthusiasm going was also, it just wasn't a question for me. It's just something that was fun to do. And you present this stuff to lower shell or fifth form or upper shell. You give them the work and you say, here it is, take it. And great. If you don't like it, at least you've experienced it. If you don't like it, it means you're different from me and I can live with that. If you really like it and you're going to ultimately be better than me, I really like that. One of the pleasures, you asked me earlier about Westminster pupils, one of the pleasures is teaching pupils who I know one day, they're not better at chemistry than me at the moment, but I know one day they will be, and will be better for those who don't do chemistry at other things than I am. And that is a great pleasure. That one looks forward to that sort of progress. So for me, it wasn't a question. And then, of course, I'd been examining most of my teaching life, and then I got to be chief examiner for EdExcel, and setting A-level papers and looking at interesting ways of setting questions which would keep people enthused even during an exam. And I did that for 15 years, and it brought a few books. The dreaded course-linked textbook, which I actually don't like, but my view was that if I don't like course-linked textbooks, I might as well not like one that I've written, rather than really not like one that somebody else has written. And I only gave up the examining when, for me, it became too formulaic and actually a bit constricting in terms of taking up huge amounts of time in holidays. So there are many ways in which you keep your enthusiasm. And talking to others in the science department and trying to cross-correlate what I do with what other people do there. Just a general sense of this is the way I look at the world, really.
And if you had to look back at your time at Westminster and pick out one standout memory for you that you're going to take with you, what's the one thing about Westminster that will stay you know, that it's, what's the most important thing about Westminster for you that you'll take with you in your retirement?
That is almost impossible to answer in a single thing, because there are just so many different areas of school life which you could pick a thing. I could pick out the pleasure of teaching clever people to do difficult things. I could pick out the environment, the ambiance, the being enveloped by history. I could pick out experiences in recent years, particularly in Abbey, when I've been more heavily involved with it. I could pick things out from all areas of what I've done. So I don't think there is a single item that I would pick out. It would just be, I suppose, what I would regard as the whole Westminster experience. And in different moods, I would look back on different things with pleasure. And I would look back on one or two things with sadness, because of the one or two pupils who tragically have died during my time here, who people who I knew well when they were at school. So there are always those things, of course, in a body of people of the size of Westminster. So it depends which bit of Westminster we're talking about. I will just look back on the whole Westminster experience as an absolutely fantastic 21 years.
And if you had the chance to live your teaching life again, is there anything you'd do differently?
The moving finger writes, and having writ moves on, nor all thy piety nor wit shall lure it back to cancel half a line, nor all thy tears wash out a word of it. In other words, words of the great Omar Khayyam, what's done is done. And if I can't rewrite it, in a sense, because that would be a different universe. What a pompous answer that is to a very simple question. So, dear listener, you can agree with me on that if you come to hear these words. Would I do anything? I sometimes wonder if I rewound it back to when I was in my mid-years at grammar school, whether I would do something else other than sciences. And I can't answer that, because I have the psyche that I've got. I think what I would say is that, no, I don't think I would change anything particularly, because I have had opportunities to develop other things. I've had opportunities which the music department has given me to listen to great music. I've had opportunities to argue about Victorian novels with people who teach them. I've had all sorts of opportunities, most of which the pupils will never have seen, because they exist in that part of life which pupils don't think you have, which is the hours that they're not with you. So I look back with pleasure and happiness on what I've done, and that's enough. I think that's great. I've had enormous good fortune to be able to wake up every morning looking forward to what I'm going to do.
And that's, and you've stayed, yeah, you've enjoyed your time here.
Great. Fantastic time here. Great people. Which isn't to say they've all been delightful. Some of them been complete pain. But that's life. And the great variety of life can be seen here. So yes, it's been absolutely terrific. And it's been terrific to be in this part of London, which actually is something of a bubble, frankly. I mean, if you're in central Westminster, it's a bubble not only for London, but for the rest of the country. There's no doubt about that. But it's a great privilege to have been in it and to see it and to have met the people I've met and to have done the things I've done. And I don't think it could have been better, frankly.
Thank you.
Thank you, James.
phone.
Doesn't matter.
Do I have to push